Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
You know, if we're serving the Lord but complaining the whole time we're doing it, if we're griping about it, well, what do I have to do this for? Well, this isn't what I signed up to do. I thought I was going to get to do this other thing. I don't want to do this. Well, then you have to really ask, where's your heart at? You see, we should be doing whatever we do with a heart for the Lord. Paul would say this later in writing to the Colossians, didn't he? He said, whatever you do, do it with all your heart as to the Lord and not to men.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian is continuing his study in the book of Romans. Join us as Pastor Brian begins in Romans chapter 1, verses 5 through 15, in a message titled, The Gospel and Rome. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
We have been called by name. And Paul, in writing to these saints in Rome, that's what he's saying to them. He says, you also are the called of Jesus Christ to all who are in Rome, beloved of God, called to be saints, grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. So Paul tells them they're called. He tells them that they're loved of God. He tells them that they're called not to be saints, but actually he says they're called saints. Notice the two little words there, to be, are italicized. And in case you don't know this, whenever you see italicized words in your Bible, those are inserted by the translators to help the flow of the sentence. And generally they do that. But here you don't even necessarily need those words, because we're not only called to be saints, we are called saints. That's what God has called us. He's called us saints. But if you think about that for a moment, really, you know, some of these things, we read them, we kind of pass by them rather quickly, we don't give a whole lot of thought to it. But, you know, if you just sit and ponder for a minute, the fact that you've been called by God, God has called you. He's called you by name. He's called you to come and be a part of his family. He's called you to come and share in the love that he has for you. He's called you, apart from this world that's perishing, to come and join him in a world that's going to go on forever and ever. I mean, that's pretty amazing stuff. But like I said, I think sometimes we can blow right past this. This is introductory stuff. We don't want to spend a whole lot of time here, but we ought to spend more time thinking about these things, thinking about who this God is, this God who's made everything that there is. He's made the entire universe. He's made us. And then he's called us to come and be part of his family. What a glorious thing. Now, in verse 8, Paul begins to now address them in Rome. He's finished now his greeting. And now he says, first, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. So Paul is letting them know right off the top that he's excited about what he hears is going on in Rome. Now, remember, we pointed this out. Paul had not been to Rome at this point. Paul did not have any involvement in the establishing of this church. As we pointed out in a previous study, we don't know who started the church in Rome. It doesn't really matter who humanly started it. We know ultimately the Lord started it. But Paul had never been there. But he had friends there. He had associates there. And he had a longing to go there. But he'd never been there. So the first thing he says to them, he says, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. So that church in Rome, everybody was talking about that church in Rome. And, you know, there are some churches where you just sense the Lord is at work. And you know what happens with those churches? The word gets out. And people start hearing all over the place. And then you go somewhere and you meet somebody and they tell you, well, I'm from such and such a church. Oh, man, I've heard of that church. Tell me about what's going on there. And that's the way it works. It kind of just spreads all around the world. Now, we happen to be part of a fellowship that has that kind of a worldwide reputation. I mean, it's amazing to me the different places I go in the world. And, you know, when people find out you're from Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, it almost like everybody just stops and says, what? You're from where? Did you realize that you're part of that kind of a congregation? But there's that testimony that's gone out. And there's that excitement, and there's that admiration in some sense, and there's that respect for what God's done here. And that was what was happening with the church in Rome as well. Paul had heard of all that God was doing there, and he was rejoicing. He was thanking God for their faith that was spoken of throughout the whole world. And then he says in verse 9, for God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers. So Paul calls God to witness here. And he says something that is interesting. He says that he serves God with his spirit in the gospel of his Son. Many in Paul's day, and especially where Paul had previously been, they seemed to serve God, but they did not do it with their spirit, or they did not do it with their heart, in other words. That's what he's talking about. What Paul's really doing right here is he's essentially saying, I'm not just going through the motions. This thing isn't mechanical for me. This isn't just external. I'm not just caught up in rituals or duties or anything like that. Paul says, no, I do this thing with my heart. And it's significant that Paul says that, because the Pharisees, of course, would have been, to a large degree, they would have been guilty of serving God not with their heart, not with their spirit, but they would have served God mechanically, externally, just keeping the rules and the regulations outwardly to look good to men, but in their hearts, they were impure and they were wicked. But Paul says, I serve God with my spirit in the gospel of his Son. It was real, in other words, to Paul. And you know what was true of the Pharisees in that day? Sadly, it's true of some people in ministry today. You could find in positions today of leadership in churches, you could find men who are there for every other reason than because their heart is in it. Some are there because it's just a job. It's just what you do. Some are there because you might get a good salary and a good retirement plan. Some are there because it makes them feel good to benevolently reach out to people, or all different kinds of motives that people have for getting into ministry or being in ministry. Sometimes it's just sheer pride. I like having some power. I like having authority over other people. I like being looked up to. I like people to call me pastor, things like that. Some people are in the ministry for those kinds of reasons, sadly. But it wasn't the case with Paul. Paul said that he served God with his spirit. His whole heart was in what he did. And that should always be true of us. We should be serving the Lord with our spirit. We should always be serving the Lord with our whole heart, not just going through the motions. And you know, we need to guard our hearts against that, because we can slip into that. We can all slip into that at times, where we're just going through the motions.
We'll return to Pastor Brian's message in just a moment. But first, we'd like to remind you to visit our website, backtobasicsradio.com. you can download a podcast of today's message or stream it for free. So take a moment and go to our website and be sure to sign up for Pastor Brian's weekly devotional. Now let's continue with today's message.
You know, I have to confess, there are times when I'm singing songs and my brain is somewhere else completely. You know, I'm lip syncing, basically. I know the words and, you know, I'm singing, but I'm not engaging in my mind. I'm not thinking about what the words of the song are. I'm not necessarily focusing on the Lord. And I'm saying that because it's a reality for all of us. We have to constantly be checking our hearts. Wait, where am I at with this? What am I doing with this? And even sometimes when we're involved in some sort of service to the Lord, you know, if we're serving the Lord but complaining the whole time we're doing it, if we're griping about it, well, what do I have to do this for? Well, this isn't what I signed up to do. I thought I was going to get to do this other thing. I don't want to do this. Well, then you have to really ask, where is your heart at? You see, we should be doing whatever we do with a heart for the Lord. Paul would say this later in writing to the Colossians, didn't he? He said, whatever you do, do it with all your heart as to the Lord and not to men. He's talking about the same thing right here. This is what he says. He says, I serve God with my spirit in the gospel of his Son. And because he's doing this with his heart, he would then go on to say that without ceasing, I make mention of you in my prayer. You know, if you don't have a heart for the ministry, you won't pray for the ministry. You won't pray for anybody in the ministry. It'll just be mechanical. It'll just be external. You'll just show up when it's the appropriate time to show up, and you'll do that thing that everybody sees you do. And you'll feel good about it. Then you'll walk away, but you won't think about it afterwards. You won't pray for the people that you ministered to. But you see, if your heart's in it, like Paul's was, he could say, I serve God with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, and go on then to say in the same breath that without ceasing, I make mention of you always in my prayers. He's a true servant of God, in other words. And so what was his prayer? Well, he prayed many things, but he mentions one specific thing here, making request, he said, if by some means, now at last, I may find a way in the will of God to come to you. So Paul was praying for them, and as he would pray for them, he would add to that prayer, Lord, let me go to Rome. I want to go there. I want to see those people. I want to reconnect with those believers I know, and I want to see those believers that I've never met face to face. Lord, I want to go see that work that you're doing there. That's what Paul was praying. And so he says, for I long to see you. I long to see you that I may impart to you some spiritual gift so that you may be established, that is, that I may be encouraged together with you by the mutual faith, both of you and me. So Paul wants to go to Rome, and he wants to go there because he wants to bring a blessing to the people. He wants to go there and build them up in the faith. That's his heart. He wanted to get to Rome, not because he wanted to tour Rome. Wasn't that he wanted to go there on vacation. He wanted to go there and minister. And he had it in his heart, all of those things that Christ had taught him, all of the things that he had experienced, he wants to come and personally share these things with the fellowship in Rome. But not only that, he says, not only do I want to come and bless you, but I know that when I come, I'm going to be blessed as well. There's going to be a mutual blessing. And Paul was absolutely right. That is so often the case. We go out at times going to places thinking and hoping and longing, understandably, to be a blessing. When you go somewhere, you want to bless the people that you go to visit. But we find so often that we get more blessed than the people. We get blessed by going. We get blessed by what the Lord does through the folks that we get to have those beautiful ministry times with. So that was the heart of Paul. And again, in this, you know, as you read some of these things and as you pause and think about them a little bit, you get some insight into the person as well. And you see here that Paul is genuinely a humble man. He's an apostle. He's had a personal visitation from Christ. He's had a personal commission from the Lord to be the apostle to the Gentiles. But he's not puffed up about it. He's not thinking that he can only give, but he can't receive from anybody because, after all, he's received from the Lord. So how could anybody else possibly minister to him? Paul has a humble attitude, and he's expecting to go among these Roman believers and to be mutually edified. He's expecting that he's going to receive a blessing when he is there with them as well. And so he says in verse 13, "Now I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that I often planned to come to you, but was hindered until now, that I might have some fruit among you also, just as among other Gentiles." So he wanted to come. It wasn't that it was a lack of desire. Quite honestly, I often say that to people because I've met people over the years that I would love to go visit them. I'd love to go to their country, or I'd love to go to their fellowship. And we talk sometimes and we'll say, "Yeah, let's do that." And right, okay, yeah, next year. We'll do it next year. And then next year comes around and something comes up and we're not able to do it. And I often find myself saying to people, look, just understand, it's not a lack of desire. I would love to come. I go everywhere. I'd love to go everywhere. But, you know, how many places can you go? I mean, you just can't go everywhere. So, you know, Paul's saying to the church in Rome, he says, it's not a lack of desire. It wasn't like I didn't want to come to you. I've been wanting to come to you, but there have been hindrances. Things have prevented me from coming. I wanted to come to you, he says, that I might have some fruit among you also, just as among other Gentiles. So Paul just had that desire, man, I want to go to Rome and I want to have some fruit there. I want to fellowship with those people. You know, the life of an apostle, it was kind of a two-edged sword. You know, there was that blessing, of course, of being able to go and to plant churches and to spend time nurturing those young fellowships, and then to move on to other places and to, you know, just launch out into these other regions. But the other side of it, of course, was it was lonely and it was challenging. The traveling, of course, was very difficult back in those days. The accommodations were far from the things that we know today. So it had that kind of that double edge to it. And it's still the same today in some ways. Like I said, it's, you know, to go out and to meet different people and to be in places and to see, there's something about that that's wonderful, that's very attractive and alluring, but there's another side of it that's very taxing as well. There's another side of it that, you know, it can become weary. I know a few guys that spend almost their entire lives in airports and on airplanes. And I mean, I do that a little bit, and the little bit that I do it, I'm exhausted. I can't imagine going at the pace that some of these guys go. But Paul understood that there was that experience of having fruit among these various Gentile congregations spread throughout the Roman world. And he wanted to have some fruit there in Rome also. And then he says this in verse 14, he says, "I am a debtor both to Greeks and to barbarians, both to wise and to unwise." Paul saw himself as a debtor in this sense. Paul felt this tremendous obligation to get the gospel to people. Paul was like a man who had discovered a cure for a previously incurable terminal disease. He was like a man who had discovered a cure, and he felt an obligation to get the message of this cure out to as many people as possible. Now, this was sort of a specific calling that Paul had. And there was an occasion where Paul would even say, "Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel." This was a specific calling that the Lord gave him, and he felt that. He felt indebted to lost men. He had once been lost himself, and now he has been saved, and he knows that the cure to all of man's ills, that the cure to all the world's problems lies in faith in Christ, so he feels himself under this obligation. He is a debtor, he says. And notice who he says that he's indebted to here as he's writing to the Romans. He says that he is a debtor to the Greeks and the barbarians, the wise and the unwise. Now, the question is, why does he say Greeks? The Romans certainly were not Greeks. They were Romans. But the fact of the matter is, they were Greeks culturally. You see, Alexander had so thoroughly Grecianized that part of the world that when Rome came to power, they adapted Greek culture. And so Rome was in some ways, although it was a separate empire and it didn't come directly out of Greece, in some ways it was just an extension of Greece. So it was culturally Greek. And the Romans, although they were proud to be Romans, they thought of themselves culturally as Greeks. And of course, the Greeks thought that their culture was the best culture, the superior culture. So in other words, if you perceived yourself to be a Greek, you perceived yourself to be part of that special group of people, that superior group, as contrasted with the barbarians. Who were the barbarians? The barbarians were everybody who wasn't Greek. So it was as simple as that. Greek culture, we have a great illustration of it in our time today. American culture has permeated so much of the world today. You know, you go all over the world today, and even in places where the last thing the leadership wants is an American influence, it's there. We have just made our way into every nook and cranny on the planet, practically. You know, it's funny sometimes when you're traveling, and maybe even in more third world kinds of places, and you see the clothes that the people are wearing, and of course, a lot of times they're sort of knockoffs of, you know, the real thing. But nevertheless, they've got their designer T-shirts on and so forth. But it's all the stuff that's being produced and promoted right here in America. And to the dismay of many leaders, as I said, American culture just sort of continues to keep pressing into these different societies. You hear sometimes that there's a lot of anti-Americanism around the world today. And sometimes people would even say, oh, you know, be careful when you're traveling, watch out. They don't like Americans over in certain parts. You know, I think that is only true on the political level. It's not true on the cultural level. It's not true on the personal level.
Thanks for joining us today on Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Brodersen. I'd like to remind you that you can get today's message and any additional resource designed to encourage you in your walk with the Lord at our website, backtobasicsradio.com. You can also follow Pastor Brian on Twitter at BackTOBRadio or like us on our Facebook page. We enjoy hearing from you. We would also like to send you a gift for supporting Back to Basics. Our gift for this month for a donation of any size is A.W. Tozer's The Knowledge of the Holy. This book illuminates God's attributes from wisdom to grace to mercy, and in doing so, restores the majesty and wonder of God in the hearts and minds of all of us. The Knowledge of the Holy is a modern classic of Christian testimony and devotion. The details for obtaining this month's book and all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll return tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Romans. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.